This is Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is Pets and Vets.
Free advice for animal lovers across the UAE.
We have got not one, but two experts this afternoon. Dr. Katrin Yarn joining us. She's the owner, general manager and head vet at the German Veterinary Clinic. And Dr. Stephanie Roman is here, the scientific sales advisor and animal care specialist. That is the SV Group. Our special topic today is when to neuter, but we are, of course, taking questions across all topics. Hello, doctors.
Hello.
Great to have you here. Now, I'm going to kick off with a new story that caught my eye. And I'm sure, Dr. Stephanie, you will have some things to say on this. Headline: Vegan dogs and cats. Study finds some pet owners are feeding their animals plant-based diets. I can see a roll of the eyes already. So this is a big study actually that happened across the world that found that some pet owners who are vegan are feeding their dogs and cats plant-based diets as well, whereas other pet owners have expressed an interest in doing so. This is in Canada and also at a Massey University in New Zealand. It studied more than 3,600 pet owners and questioned them on what types of pet they owned, about their diets and concerns regarding pet food, amongst other queries. So the researchers found that 27% of the vegan studies said that they currently fed them a plant-based diet, which might not sound like a huge number of people, but actually translates to quite a big percentage. What is your take on a plant-based diet for cats and dogs? Let's use an example rather than pets, because some pets should be having a vegan diet.
Yes, that's right. They're a bird, possibly. I think this is super interesting. And it's definitely a hot topic at the moment in terms of the kind of veterinary nutrition community. I do sort of applaud people in a way that they're thinking, you know, that they want to do something healthy for their pets. They're, thinking that maybe feeding a vegan diet might be more sustainable. What we need to remember is that the nutritional needs of dogs and cats are very different to humans. And cats particularly do really need to have a meat-based diet. There are a number of reasons for that. One of the biggest reasons is that they have a need for essential nutrients. Taurine is a perfect example. This is an essential amino acid that's only found in animal tissue, so cannot be found in plants. If cats go for a long period without having taurine in their diet, they can have any number of issues, typically heart-related issues. So they can suffer from heart disease. They could potentially die. It's quite serious. People tend not to think about nutritional problems being so serious. So I would encourage people to certainly do their research before they decide to maybe put their pet onto a radical diet. And certainly they should talk to their vet. But there's some really interesting research coming out of a number of different universities globally, looking at the effects of these, what we're calling boutique diets.
That sounds like a sounds like a euphemism for something that you really want to say.
Yeah.
Dr. Katrin, what about in the vet clinic? Have you had any people coming into practice with questions around vegan diets for their animals?
Not so much vegan, I think. I mean, people do take a big interest in diets, definitely. And, you know, there are a lot of trends and, as Stephanie says, boutique diets around. Raw feeding is another typical example, gluten-free feeding, another one. And I think exactly as Stephanie has said, just because we, you know, perhaps feel it's healthy for us doesn't mean that it's healthy or beneficial for our pets. So it's really important to look at the different physiologies of animals and people and, you know, to understand that they really are quite different.
It's not something you want to be, you know, risking.
Got
Dr. Stephanie and Dr. Katrin joining us this afternoon for Pets and Vets. Your chance to have your animal related questions answered. It's on 4001, or you can message us using the Dubai Eye app, and there's lots of questions to get through.
Yay.
I know Georgia's made you a lovely cup of tea.
Yes.
Are you feeling suitably caffeinated?
That was a great cup of tea, Georgia.
Yes. Yeah. Quite traditional, we
thank
thought.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I'm very good with sugar.
Right, let's crack on. Tarika said, my sister's dog is developing cataracts. We were discussing this unfortunate situation and my five-year-old daughter chimed in saying, it should be called dogaracts. Love it. But do you have any advice?
Yeah, I mean, cataracts are basically where the lens in the eye becomes cloudy and opaque and actually becomes mineralized. And it basically can turn animals blind or prevent them from seeing. So if it happens in both eyes, it's quite serious. Mm-hmm. There can be a number of different reasons for it. Genetics is one of them. Some dog breeds are predisposed genetically. Diabetes can cause cataracts. So there's lots of things that can cause it. There are surgeries available to remove cataracts. They're relatively common. There isn't anybody in the UAE that's based here that does cataract surgery, but there are visiting specialists that do. Normally, we wouldn't recommend surgery unless both eyes are affected. Because if one eye is okay, the animal can still see with one eye, and we don't then want to, risk operating on the affected eye. So a relatively common problem.
I hope that helps there, Tarek, and I applaud your daughter's insights there. Who doesn't love a pun? Got a message from Rob here. Vegan diets for omnivores and carnivores as animal cruelty. It is that simple. Have your say this afternoon on this topic. It's 4001. Your messages are free using that Dubai Eye app. Also the way to get your questions answered. Olga got in touch saying, hello, I've been thinking about making a small birthday cake for my dog, Selma. Also, please include the names of your pets because I love them. You can also attach photos for using the Dubai Eye Messenger app. So if you want to send a picture of your animal, I would welcome it. So Selma, it's a birthday coming up. My family likes to have small gatherings and the day we adopted Selma. What I'm asking is, what are the best ingredients for a dog cake? Thinking about using kibble for the centre, but not sure where to go from there. And are there doggy safe frosting brands that I can use? Thank you. Oh, I love this. What do you reckon, Stephanie? What would make some good ingredients for a doggy birthday cake?
So what I used to recommend to people when I was in practice is that they would basically get some ordinary dog kibble, like what they would ordinarily feed their dog. They can mix it with a little bit of water. You can just put it in the blender and make like a little...
Paste,
basically like a little cake batter. And you can actually put it into a cake tin and bake it in the oven. Or you could put it into a muffin tin, make little, miniature dog cake.
What about frosting? What about like something to make it more of a celebration, Stephanie?
Frosting.
Pate?
I know. We want to make them look pretty, don't we? Yeah. You know, if the dog's not sensitive to anything, maybe you could have a little treat on the top of some chicken or something yummy. They could even, spoon a bit of wet food on the top. I think that Selma will just appreciate whatever her mummy Olga does for her.
I love it. Keep your messages coming in this afternoon. Your chance to get an expert second opinion or indeed just some baking advice from our expert this afternoon. Nick has got in touch saying, my Persian cat went through a funny phase last week. She kept on being sick for 3 days, usually on my rug. Why they never pick the tile floor? Yes, Nick, had this morning. We had some guys doing some work in our garden, so put the dogs in the kitchen, let them out. We on the rug. I'm like, we on the tile. It's half a foot away. Anyway, sorry, back to Nick. Saying she stopped now, but wondering what caused it. Could it be fur balls? I groom her regularly.
Most definitely could be fur balls. Usually fur balls have a typical sort of shape. They can be like almost sort of little sausages. And if you are brave enough to pick them apart, you'll find that they're made up of fur. However, if they're not fur balls, I think if the cat stopped vomiting after 3 days and has not vomited since, has a good appetite, is otherwise happy and healthy, it probably was something that perhaps he or she ate. If the vomiting reoccurs, if it continues, if the cat's in any way, unhappy, off food, decreased appetite, then that's definitely time for a visit to the vet. But cats do vomit occasionally, and that can be relatively normal in inverted commas, yeah.
Gautam has been in touch saying, my Cocker Spaniel Milo, extra points for saying the name of your animal, thank you very much, gets a recurring ear or skin infection and smells a lot when it happens. We've tried a lot of medication and bath, but it doesn't work. Any suggestions, please? Can we help him? Thank you.
Poor Cocker Spaniels, they have these big floppy ears, and if they have kind of narrow ear canals, it's just like the perfect environment for bacteria to flourish. And of course, typically they tend to get recurring infections. And I think every vet has dealt with a Cocker Spaniel where you just clear one infection and everyone's happy. And then two weeks later, they're back with another one. Also, if they're dogs that like to swim, so if they're going to the beach regularly, obviously there's more moisture in the ears. What we often think about for these kind of dogs where they just constantly have recurring infections, the ears are really an extension of the skin. So it could be possible that this dog has some, other skin problems as well. It would be worth, I think, exploring, some considerations around allergies, potentially food allergy, I think it would be time to talk to the vet about next steps. It may be that this dog would benefit from a hydrolyzed protein diet. It may be that this dog might benefit from a diet that has some nutrients to support skin barrier function. I think it's time to maybe explore next steps rather than just treating the
infections time and time
as
again.
They come. Okay. I used to work at this clinic and we had this beautiful Cocker Spaniel, Harvey was his name, and he had the most gigantic ears you've ever seen. And it just had constant infections again and again and again. And so the vet in the end had to do a surgery just so that we could dry this dog's ear out. Basically, he got the two ears and he had to put them sew them together on the top of the dog's head with some buttons on either side just to give him a couple of days for his ears to dry.
Oh,
and
Harvey.
It actually worked quite well for poor Harvey. Anyway.
I've got Cocker Spaniels and I frequently get like a scrunchie and put their ears back because they're always dripping them in the water and
all
the rest
of
it.
I know, they're so messy. I have a Spaniel Poodle cross and her ears are just always gross.
But we love them anyway. We love them anyway. Anything to add there on the topic of skin and ear infections there, Dr. Katrin?
Yeah, I think I agree 100% with Dr. Stephanie in that I think allergies would be the most likely underlying cause for this. And there are a number of ways to explore that. It can be dietary. About 25% of pets who have allergies have dietary allergies. The rest are environmental and they're a lot harder to find and find out about and control. But there are allergy tests available where we take some blood and we send it off and we get a proper sort of allergy spectrum, and then we can start to exclude the things that perhaps the dog's allergic against, but probably does need to be supported with some kind of medication to just relieve the itchiness that's associated with that. And if the skin and the ears are smelly, there's probably a yeast infection involved there as well. So something to help with the yeasts. But yeah, most likely allergies, I would say.
Valentine has been in touch. Hi, I'm right next door to your studio. Hi. And can't resist asking you about rabbits for my daughter Zoe. Her 11th birthday is soon. Where do I buy healthy baby bunnies in Dubai? Are they a safe pet to have, a good companion, or is it cruel to keep bunny in a cage? How long do they live for? I need advice on this surprise bunny for my daughter. Dr. Katrin, what's your take on first pets and bunnies in particular?
Yeah, this is a great question. And bunnies have become very popular, over, let's say, the last 10 years as pets for children. They live now with this sort of improvements in veterinary healthcare. They can live to 6, 7, 8 years of age. So I guess that's a good thing because it means that, the child doesn't lose the pet after a couple of years after getting attached to it. So that's good. However, I am not sure how great rabbits are as children's pets. They can be a little bit difficult to handle. They've got extremely strong back legs. Mm-hmm. They can cause some injuries if they're not being handled properly, if they sort of thump the child with their back legs. They can also have very kind of scratchy claws, and they do also bite. So yeah, they're perhaps not the sort of cuddliest, loveliest companion, although one should never generalize, and I know lots of people have lovely rabbit pets and they're very affectionate to them. The other thing, I guess, is that rabbits can get some sort of quite nasty diseases. The main one that we see here are mites, skin mites, and they can be notoriously difficult to treat and get rid of. And we have had a few very unfortunate cases where we just have not been able to treat the rabbit mites. And that can then be quite sad, very expensive to treat them, for an otherwise relatively inexpensive to keep pet. The veterinary treatment can be extremely expensive if they get sick. So I think lots of things to consider.
What about alternatives?
Yeah, I think guinea pigs make much better pets. They're not nearly as sort of skittish. They're not nearly as likely to injure a child, and they don't get as sick as rabbits do. They make great pets, actually. They're very a very good alternative, I would say. They live for probably roughly the same amount of time.
Hope that helps, Valentine, and happy birthday to Zoe. Peter's been in touch on 4001. Sounds desperate. I'm at my wit's end about our female mixed breed, age 2. Barks non-stop every evening at cars, kids outside, cats, driving us and the neighbours mad. We've tried bringing her inside. She just barks inside. Tried throwing a bottle of stones, not at her, ignoring, soothing. Saw a product online called a Pet Safe Outdoor Bark Control Birdhouse, which emits a noise when they bark. What do the vets think? You're both making interested looking faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a complex topic, this. And I would say with my behaviorist hat on that, you know, we really need to identify why the dog feels the need to bark and why it feels that barking is somehow working for it. So obviously, excuse me, what's happening is the dog is barking and the perceived threat, in inverted commas, is probably moving away. So if there are people walking by outside, dog barks, people walk along.
Job done.
Exactly. I've just got rid of the people. So I think, you know, that's the, we need to always think about where does the motivation come from for the dog. So obviously, if it's environmental like that, it can be so difficult to control because you have no control over the people that are walking past. Mm-hmm. I would be very, very careful with any kind of bark devices because often they can really quite frighten the dogs. And then all of a sudden, they're not just barking because it's something that works for them, but also because they've become a little bit frightened of what happens when they do bark. So as with all behavior cases, they need to be treated individually. You need to try and get to the cause of the problem and you need to try and sort of manage the environment as well as doing some behavior modification work. So yeah, feel free to give me a shout if you'd like some more help with that one.
There you go, Dr. Catchin. James has been in touch on the app saying we've decided to adopt a cat. First of all, adopt, don't shop.
Amazing.
Well done.
Yep.
We went to a rescue centre and we fell in love with a 5-month-old kitten. Then they told us that the cat was born with FIV. So before we adopt this cat, what do I need to do? Are we looking at hundreds of dirhams a month on medication? What kind of prognosis are we looking at? I don't want to bring a cat home, get attached and then lose him too soon. We don't have any other cats, just a lazy 15-year-old dog. There's no chance of my dog getting this, is there? Any help would be appreciated. So what's FIV?
So FIV is a virus that cats can contract and they're species specific. So that means FIV only cats can get. So dogs.
F for feline.
F for feline, exactly. Dogs cannot get, humans cannot get. So it's the feline immunodeficiency virus, which is the cat equivalent of HIV. So it is a virus that affects the immune system. Now, cats transmit FIV most commonly through fighting and bite wounds, although they can be born with FIV. So my first recommendation would be is if you do adopt this cat, it's probably going to be an indoor only cat because otherwise the danger to the outdoor cats is too great of catching FIV from your cat. In terms of, you know, how the virus works, if you like, it can be possible that your cat might not have any clinical symptoms for many, many years and that it's kind of a normal, happy, healthy cat. It might be more prone to having dental infections or mild flu-type infections, but very often they can live a very healthy life for quite a number of years until the moment when the virus starts to really take hold, and then usually it affects organs, and then that's when, you know, the cat's life comes to an end. It's very difficult to predict when that will happen, so it's hard to say how many years you could have the cat living a healthy life for. But I know many FIV-positive cats that do just fine. It takes a little bit of extra care in terms of veterinary prevention, so they should be vaccinated, you know, appropriately from a vet who knows really about, you know, the virus and how it works. You know, regular parasite control, so there's no risk of catching parasites and just a very healthy lifestyle, good diet. So it's a possibly a tough decision, but I'd say go for it.
Yeah, give the cat a home. You've fallen in love with him.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Now how it goes, James. Special topic for today is when to neuter. Dr. Catchin, safe to say a bit of a hot topic.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
is it something that comes up in clinic and indeed, you know, vet Facebook pages and WhatsApp groups and
absolutely. And I think there's a lot of research going on at the moment surrounding neutering, you know, what's the best time to neuter, what are the potential side effects, complications, and also how neutering affects behavior. So there's a lot of research going on at the moment, and it's very, very interesting, the things that are coming out of that.
So let's start with, well, you know, let's break it down. Neutering is basically desexing.
Correct. Yeah. So neutering is the surgical removal of the parts of the organs that produce the hormones. So in male animals, that would be the testicles that produce the testosterone. And in female animals, and this is a little bit where the hot topic starts, you can either remove the ovaries that produce the estrogen, or you can leave the ovaries in place and remove the womb so that the animal's not able to get pregnant. And there has been some research recently that has shown that particularly large breed dogs, and I'm thinking of Rottweilers in particular, benefit from having their ovaries left in because it reduces the risk of a certain type of bone cancer.
Okay.
So yeah, this is where it all starts and gets quite complicated.
Okay. But basically we are pro-neutering for population control reasons.
Absolutely. In particular in this country, I think we have to be.
And let's talk about some behavioural issues that it can address, specifically with dogs. What have you seen in the past?
Yeah, so with male dogs, it can definitely reduce some behaviours, you know, such as unwanted mounting behaviours and also roaming behaviours. So going out to try and find
a friend,
ladies,
a lady friend,
exactly, all those kind of things. It has not been shown to reduce behaviour problems, and it has not been shown to reduce. No, that's wrong. It has not been shown to reduce all types of aggression, only some that are particularly associated with testosterone.
Okay. And what about potential side effects then? That's obviously, we've got the recovery period, but afterwards, is there anything else we need to be aware of?
So I think Stephanie can maybe talk about the weight gain side of things.
Yeah. I guess from a nutritional perspective, the two things that we do become more concerned about after neutering for both male and female cats and dogs is the risk of weight gain, number one, and the increased risk of developing a urinary problem, typically a urolith for female cats and for male cats developing bladder inflammation particularly. Again, I think that these are small side effects that are, you know, vastly outweighed by the benefits of becoming neutered. I think what owners should potentially do after neutering is speak to their vet about how they should change the diet. So mm-hmm. typically what we'd recommend is going on to a diet that is sort of designed to help manage weight gain. So something that is a bit lower in calories, usually a bit higher in fiber, higher in protein. And there are some changes that we can make with a diet to help reduce the risk of urinary stones forming. So a nice discussion definitely to have with your vet. And the easiest way to get on top of weight gain is before it happens, so preventing it rather than dealing with it after 3 years when you have a grossly overweight dog.
So just like in people.
Yeah.
Hope that helps answer any questions that you may have about neutering. Let's squeeze in a couple more questions. Patrick is a new cat owner. He says on 4001, my wife and I adopted a cat at the weekend. We live in a 2-bedroom apartment. It's not that big. For the first day and night, we put him in my office with a big cat tree that has a hidey hole, a cuddle cup bed, a litter box, food, water, and a few toys. For the most part, he was fine, super cuddly. Let us brush him, which he loved. He's been using the litter box, eating his food and drinking water. This morning, we opened the door to the office and let him roam around the apartment. Is there anything else I should be doing? He has been hiding under the living room couch for a few hours, just chilling. I want to make sure he's not bored while also giving him space. Tried playing with him with some toys, but he isn't that interested. As a new cat owner, I'm overthinking everything. He fully ate last night, but it only ate half his food this morning. Is that related just to moving? Thank you for all the help and advice.
Aww. I mean, it sounds like you're doing an absolutely amazing job already. I think, you know, one of the biggest things if you're in an apartment, cats absolutely love height. So the fact that you have a scratch post already with a hidey hole is perfect. But add a few more shelves, high cupboard spaces, perhaps put some snuggly beds on some high cupboard spaces so that, you know, he has the height to go to.
Why do they like height?
Oh, they just love it.
It comes back to climbing trees.
Yeah, they just love it. And they feel safe at height. I think that's another big thing. So if they can observe their kingdom from a height, they feel a lot safer.
Watch their human slaves.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, adding lots of sort of hidey places and hidey holes. But it sounds like you're doing a great job. One thing I'd say is to perhaps introduce some puzzle feeders or some feeding devices that the cat needs to actually hunt for the food. And there are some great products on the market. We've got a lot in the clinic. So again, feel free to drop me a line for any of those.
Brilliant. Last question, we'll squeeze this one in from Jamil, saying our cat Cheeto, great name for a cat, has a bacterial and fungal ear infection. We've been given eardrops, 5 drops in each ear until it's gone. It's twice a day. He's a sweet cat until he feels scared, then he'll hide under heavy furniture and won't come up. If we try to crate him, he screams, drools and pants so much that twice a day is pretty much impossible. Would combining 2 doses in one be okay? I can keep him still long enough to drop the ears and rub them so the drops don't come out, but twice isn't possible, especially with everyone working. The struggle is real. It's like eye drops in kids. Yeah, horrendous. What about doing that double dosing now? What's the benefit of having the two doses per day?
Yeah, so I'll start this and Stephanie, I'm sure, can take over. I would not double dose. Number one, it's going to be a large amount of fluid to put in the ear at one time. And also, obviously, the eardrops probably contain some antibiotics and some anti-inflammatories, and you want to be dosing those at the correct intervals. Now, you might try, if your cat loves something super tasty, like sardines, tuna, you know, soft food, anything like that, is to perhaps try and distract the cat with some super tasty food whilst trying to put the eardrops in.
Bribery.
Rather than getting into a big fight, because the cat will learn, and every time the eardrop bottle comes out, he'll be zoop under the heavy furniture. So try and combine it with something positive.
All right. Hope that helps everybody. And there we go. Dr. Stephanie from St. Vincent Group. And thank you, Dr. Katrin from the German Veterinary Clinic.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.